How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and five specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Americans are more aware than ever before about the importance of taking care of your mental health. In fact, nearly one in four Americans have been to therapy since 2020. But mental health treatment with a Western framework like talk therapy isn't always inclusive or even effective for everyone. Take the Asian American Pacific Islander, or AAPI, community, for example. This group is reported to be three times less likely to seek mental health care. According to the CDC, one of the leading causes of death for Asian Americans aged 15 to 34 in 2022 was suicide. One study found that Southeast Asian refugees are at higher risk of PTSD associated with trauma before and after immigrating to the U.S. On top of cultural stigma and shame around asking for help, there are a lack of services for Asian people that's culturally informed in their languages and accessible to all people. So to learn more about mental health among the Asian American Pacific Islander, or AAPI, community, we sat down with Yoonsun Che, professor at the University of Chicago's Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice, and Ada Zhang, a local writer, storyteller, and educator. Professor Che starts by illustrating more about how much of an issue this is in the AAPI community.
So you already gave the national trend, but I'm also conducting a longitudinal study, with Asian Americans, about half Filipinos and half Korean families, so a total of 800.
Okay.
And I've been following them since 2014.
They're from Chicago?
Yes. So they are in four major counties around Chicago. So they're about 400, and then we've been interviewing and following the youth of the family and the parents. So it's a little shy away from 1,600.
Wow. And what are you learning?
So we collected the data the first time, 2014, and every 2 years. And we just started our fifth time. So they started with a suicidal ideation at about less than 10%. And it went up to 16 and higher percent in just the last 5-6 year period.
Wow.
So this is really significant and serious. So not just national data, but locally here in Chicago, too, that we see the same trends.
Same trends. Ada, mental health is something that many people struggle with, as we know. But why do you think that this is a dire situation for this community and that it needs to be addressed now?
Absolutely. I think there is a part where there is the kind of a silencing within the community, right? The kind of a myth of model minority, the taboo to talk about, and we tend to see mental health as an individual deficit or individualized issue rather than thinking of it as a kind of a systematic issue. And so there's that silencing that if you have a mental health issue, it's a taboo, it's a stigma, mm-hmm. not just to you individually, but to the whole family. And so there is that part about people are hesitant to talk about mental health issue because it's bringing the stigma to the family as a whole. And so there's also the kind of what I call the culture taboo where you don't want to air the dirty laundry,
yeah.
right? Whether it is about, talking therapists, talking to outsiders, or even for me as a storyteller, telling stories to the wider audience. This fact that you are going to say something that may not be positive about your own family or community.
So instead you choose to keep it to yourself.
Absolutely. I think the kind of airing your dirty laundry, not just yourself, but your family, has been a consistent taboo for a lot of Asian Americans.
So Ada, what do you think about what Professor Che was talking about, right? As part of her research, she's been studying 800 Filipino and Korean families for the past decade or so. I mean, and suicide ideation has gone up over the last 5 years alone. What do you think about that?
Not surprised. And part of it is I think there is a kind of a silencing. We don't want to talk about mental health. I will also say the other thing when I was talking to the professor is the way we talk about, think about a concept of sacrifice. And when I'm sure that when you talk to younger generations of Asian Americans, they will have this very, this narrative where my parents, right, sacrifice a lot for me.
Yeah.
And therefore, I'm going to major, you know, I'm going to follow the career profession that they desire. And so I have to, oftentimes have to tell them, you can honor your parents' sacrifices, but you don't need to pay with your happiness.
Mm.
There got to be a medium where you can balance between respecting your parents' expectations and kind of a desire for you to have a better life.
Is right? there a pressure?
Absolutely, right? Even.
Right. So if I can add to Ida's point that we've been trying to explain why this upsurge and a mental distress. I mean, you know, people's been distressed for the last several years, for sure.
Right.
But the upsurge trend is really disturbing among Asian Americans. And two major factors emerged. One was parent-child dynamics, and especially cultural differences, just Ada talked about. So the way that parents sort of like socialize their children not to talk about a mental health problem is pretty substantial. And then also the culture gap. The parent generation made all the sacrifices.
Yeah.
They worked 3-2 jobs to send their kids to good schools. And the kids know it too. They appreciate them so much. But nonetheless, sort of that they are becoming where they're coming of an age and then they realize the pressures are now on them too.
Mm.
So there's that. And I think another sort of the one major topic is the racial discrimination and the racial experience. And although maybe they're portrayed as model minority, they are doing well, they're thriving, that's also doubled up with the mental distress that they're struggling.
Right.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. Inspire change. Shape the future. WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
I want to throw in some data here. This is from the National Latino and Asian American Study. It says Asian Americans are about 3 times less likely to seek mental health services compared to white Americans, right? And so often that cultural stigma that you mentioned, that's noted as one of the big factors. What else can you share about what that cultural stigma looks like, Ada?
One, I want to emphasize, I think we also have the kind of reservation and silencing how to express love. And I grew up, my parents they didn't say, I love you. That's not, our love language
I've heard
is
that before.
A little bit different.
Yeah.
And so people will say, it doesn't feel like love, right? The parents would say, well, work harder, or I the meals, that's enough. And so I think we also need to think about how do we express love, right? How do we think about love in a different context.
Yes.
Right? And particularly there's a generational difference where my parents' generation or even my generation might be, well, I cook you three meals, that's enough. Or I work several jobs to send you to college, that's enough. But for the younger generation that grew up in this country, it's a very different understanding of how do you express desire and love. So that, yeah. I think that's something that we need to take into consideration.
Very interesting.
And I want to mention something also in terms of the kind of a sense of belonging. I'm an immigrant myself, so when people ask questions about where are you from, right, mm-hmm. that, you know, it's microaggression. But still, yesterday, that raised the question of where do I belong? But that means very different when you were born here, when you grew up here. This is home for you. But if day in and day out, ask my students, you know, who is getting asked these questions, and they will raise their hand. And this is a home. This is all they know. And that constant microaggression, right? And oftentimes when we think about Asian American experiences, it's not just the brutal assaults out there. It's also the, well, you speak English well, right?
Or microaggression?
You know, yes, microaggression that you...
Where are you from? You say, I'm from Chicago.
Where are you from? Absolutely.
Where are you really from?
Day in and day out, when you get asked these questions that constantly mark you as different, mark you as outsider, mark you as not a member of this country, I think that you're going to have questions about where you belong, where you fit in.
Well, I also want to make this clear because this is important, right? While we are using, especially for this conversation, the term Asian American or AAPI, we are talking about a very huge community made up of so many different ethnic groups, Chinese, Korean, Indian, Filipino, Pakistani, Vietnamese, Malaysian, so forth. So to be in the diaspora and then be lumped together in the U.S. under this one umbrella, what's that impact?
Right. So, and also I think I wanted to also add to your point that Asian Americans are not just even diverse, but socioeconomically they're like a one over the other. Almost people call it a bimodal. There's pretty several groups that have higher education and higher income relative to other groups. But we also have significant proportion of Asian American communities that are low education and low income. So they're sort of the hidden in this whole monolithic like Asian American community. And also I wanted to add to Ada's earlier point that with the data that I have, I can provide the data. The families struggle quite a bit. A younger generation is like really wanting more from the parents.
You mean the families that you talked about that were struggling with suicidal ideation?
Right. And often what the parents, exactly what Ada said, they said, well, what else can I do? I brought meals to the family. I'm sending you good schools. In the meantime, kids want parents to say, I love you, more physical, expressive, not just instrumental, we call it a support, but physical and affectionate, sort of the way of expression.
Yeah.
And it's hard for parents to do because they did not grow up in such a way. But they also need to understand kids are growing up American here in this context.
Mm-hmm. I think in this country, we tend to have this idea, one size fits all, right? You know, we provide mental health in this sort of standardized way. And but I would say how we arrived makes a difference. Our journey makes a difference.
Yeah.
I came in as an international student, but I also work with National Cambodian Heritage Museum. A lot of the community members arrived as refugees who have gone through genocide wars. And so their mental health needs as a community, as individuals, are very different.
Yeah.
But we kind of a lump everyone together. There's no deviation in terms of how the mental health needs for, let's say, international student, immigrant.
Absolutely.
Or, for example, asylum seekers and refugees.
Yeah. And I can relate to that, too. I mean, I'm an immigrant as well, and I know that I recognize some differences in just how quickly, or not so quickly, I was open to the idea of talk therapy, right? Just a Caribbean background. We just didn't do that, right? It just wasn't something, we didn't need help. We figured it out, right? And so it took years of me being in this country, or in North America, rather, to even be open to something like that. To, like you said before, to, you know, opening that door and airing that dirty laundry.
but also who is providing service. And I don't know, I remember decades ago, you know, I was I realized I need to see somebody, right? And the thing is, I went through quite a few of them because I couldn't find somebody who truly understand my background. And when you have to tell your backstories in a therapy session, what it reminds me is the difference. I don't think you're getting it. I don't think you're understanding. If I have to repeat that cultural context, have to contextualize my stories, mm-hmm. have to give you all the backstories, have to explain to you.
You always have to add an aside.
I'm here right? in seek of help. I shouldn't have to educate you.
Yes.
So that raises the question of, what's our mental health education? Where is that cultural competence? And we can think about that not just in mental health, but also in all aspects of mm-hmm. social services as well.
When young people struggle with their career choices, the counselor typically asks them, what do you want? And that kind of question may not be well settled with the Asian American families.
Right.
And kids will say, well, my parents want X, Y, and Z. Counselor pushes back and say, what do you want? And for children, I mean, young people, what parents want is still pretty significant and it's really important in their process. Because of the sort of the culture emphasis on parents and sort of honoring parents' wishes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where exactly what Ada is talking about, that often these young people have to explain and educate the counselors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about. You know, you, Ada, have mentioned before how while there are external factors that impact AAPI mental health, like racism, as we've been discussing, there are also things happening internally. What do you mean exactly?
I do gender-based violence, right? So I taught at university. For the mental health reason, I left academia to pursue happiness, right?
Yeah.
And so, and I taught the subjects on intimate partner violence and sexual assault, right? And if you look at, you know, if you look at intimate partner violence, if you look at sexual assault, right, the kind of interpersonal violence, the perpetrators aren't always people from outside of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is the kind of reservation and silence to talk about intimate partner violence within the community. And that's across all marginalized communities, right? In some way, I totally understand because we don't want people, men, to be demonized, right, within the larger mainstream right narrative because of racism.
Right.
On the other hand, I have increasingly found problematic if we don't think about the inequities within, we don't talk about the violence that we could do to one another. It could be gender.
Yeah.
It could be class issue. It could be colorism. It could be other different aspects. And I find the most difficult thing is how do you critique one's own community while understanding that you don't want your critique to be misused,
mm-hmm.
to be weaponized against your own.
And is this part of the reason why you're doing so much work, Ada, to create spaces for people in the community to heal and tell their stories?
Absolutely.
The storytelling is a big part of what you do.
Absolutely. I left academia to pursue storytelling. And this is what I have found is, we all do storytelling, right, every day in private sphere. But there's something about when you tell stories in public to an audience.
Yeah.
It's a very different kind of a commitment to truth. Because whatever you say, you're not going to take it back. Not only are you telling, you also have witnesses.
Yeah.
And so and if you're going to tell stories and you're going to name it, right? You can't solve any, you can't confront any issues. You
Absolutely.
Can't. You can't tell truth without naming it exactly as it is.
Yeah.
And so that's a very different kind of power. And so I always encourage Asian Americans who oftentimes are hesitant to talk about, to speak truth in
right.
public, to say it out loud, whatever it is that you have to name.
Absolutely.
It can be child sexual abuse. It can be intimate partner violence. And unless you're willing to speak truth, the experiences will always
yeah.
own you. And so that's why I produce shows for people to tell stories, and that's part of the healing journey.
Mm-hmm. We're almost out of time, but Professor, I want to ask you to take us here. What steps need to be taken to better serve the community's mental health? Like, how do you serve everyone, not just certain people, not just the youth, but everybody interested in taking care of their mental health?
I think we really need to sort of, I mean, as Ada said, we need to accept when you struggle, then it's a struggle. We need to call it out, and then we need to acknowledge and then provide more services. But I think what's also important for Asian community is that those model minority stereotype are not compliments.
Yeah.
And that has masked so much struggle, and do not internalize them. It's not a cool thing, and we need to really confront the reality.
We'll leave it there for now, but we could have talked forever on this subject. Thank you so much for making the time. Yoon Sun Che, who's a professor at the University of Chicago's Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice, and Ada Jang, who's a writer, storyteller, and educator. This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Micah Yasin, edited by Meha Ahmed, and mixed by Brenda Ruiz. Make sure to check back on the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you don't miss a thing. You can sign up at wbez.org/resetnews. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely.